That music means only one thing. Upon further review with the podcast profs.
Wait, you mean it doesn't mean nostalgia for anybody or?
No.
Really?
No.
Wow.
It's our music. Nobody else is relevant.
Do we have the copyright?
Let's move on. Boy, voice of reason here, and Mr. Legal, holy cow. No, he is correct, and he usually is. A good laugh to get started. But welcome to episode 18-ish of Upon Further Review with the Podcast Profs. I am Anthony Moretti, an associate professor in the School of Communications here at Robert Morris University, and my sidekick, as always, is...
John Roland, and I'm actually going to have a voice today, because... Today, it's just us two.
Wait.
I could let you talk to yourself, but...
Where's Soren?
That's mean.
Where's Soren?
I don't know. You tell me.
He's not here?
No. What'd you do to him?
Do you know what this means? Do you know the kind of fun we're going to have knowing that it's just us?
Games of Duck, Duck, Goose?
Nah. How about Games of the State of the Union?
It's not a game.
Can be.
I mean, it's a crappy movie. A really crappy movie.
Yes,
actually.
It was not a particularly good movie. I will agree with you. No, all kidding aside, Soren Fanning, who is my usual partner in podcast crime, is not able to be on campus today because of some family issues, and we got to get his family back on the health beam here. They've had a run of sort of nasty luck with, I think he's calling it the Martian flu. So,
yeah. But also car issues.
Yeah. Yes. Apparently,
he had to cancel my class because it was the only time he could get his car repaired before inspection.
That's no fun. That is no fun. But Soren is here in spirit, at least, I think. He's here in spirit.
I don't know. You know him better than me, so.
Okay.
I'll let you be the judge.
We'll have him here in spirit, but he will join us hopefully next week. It's been a couple of weeks since the sort of trio of podcast trouble has been together between schedules and illnesses and student meetings and whatnot that has gone on. But John Roland, who has sort of acquired the nom de plume of the voice of reason, will indeed be my podcast partner in crime today. You ready for this?
Sure.
You think you can handle this pressure?
I mean, I don't know if it's pressure.
Oh, what is it then?
Responsibility.
Oh. Well, your generation's good at responsibility.
Yeah.
Yeah, but my generation's totally flubbed it up, so we got to hand it off to you guys to fix it. All right. No, all kidding aside, again, episode 18 of Upon Further Review with the Podcast Profs, and certainly the primary talking point around the country today is Donald Trump's first State of the Union, which he delivered on Tuesday evening, and we are recording this podcast the next afternoon, more specifically January 31st. And there were some obvious takeaways. Good, I think, if you're a Republican. Bad, I think, if you are a Democrat. I thought the highlight or low light, depending upon where you fall on the political spectrum, was when the president suggested last night that the time for divisiveness is over and that it is necessary for the country, both in terms of members of Congress and the public as a whole, to come together.
But there's never been a good time for divisiveness.
This is true.
If you want to argue, like, being divisive against Britain back mm-hmm. then, I mean, mm-hmm. I guess I'll give you that, but there's no reason to be divisive inside of a coherent nation mm-hmm. that's happy as a nation if you ignore Texas's attempts to secede several times.
Could you imagine Texas seceding and California opting to do the same? What a mess that would become, huh?
Texas would probably be kind of okay. California mm-hmm. would...
fall into the ocean.
The California fault would run its course.
The liberal bastion that would be California, right? But the challenge with what the president suggested last night was that he immediately used, or after saying, time for unity, time for us to come together as a country, was that he outlined a very hard right political agenda that resonated very positively with the Republicans in Congress. You saw the number of times on Tuesday night that they stood and gave the president a standing ovation. And you also saw how it resonated so negatively with Democrats, who looked like somebody had put super glue on the seats in which they were on, and they almost never got up on Tuesday night. So, you know, I think any hopes of last night's speech doing anything for national unity ended at about 10:25 or whatever time the president finished up.
As somebody who hasn't ever watched a State of the Union, this one included, I at least read up, like, I don't know, maybe half of it with critical analysis. But has the standing ovation thing really happened before in the way that it has?
The standing ovations occur during a State of the Union for a couple of things. One is, it is always practice that, no matter Republican, Democrat, does not matter, when the president enters the chamber and walks down the center aisle there toward the podium, that he is given a standing ovation. That is a sign of respect for the office and that sort of thing. And loud applause, you know, is rather consistent or consistent with that idea, especially with the president's party. So that's not a surprise. There often are, as we saw on Tuesday night, significant reasons to do standing ovations when the president identifies members of the public who have done something that is special, that really sort of highlights a good American value. And there were several of those people last night. There also were some people last night who got standing ovations because they have been subjected to just horrible tragedies. Most specifically, two couples from New York and a couple from Ohio who, for different reasons, all lost their children in the last year or so. But last night did have a Banana Republic feel to it at times. The president didn't literally say, "Okay, stand up," but it was almost like like there was a light over the president's head and that flashed, you know, "Stand now." And what was, I think, especially troubling for a lot of the people who watched last night was that the number of times the president himself applauded.
That's kind of weird.
That is kind of weird. Now, again, when you're recognizing somebody up in the family box and he or she is a private citizen, yes, applause from the president of the United States, perfectly acceptable within the bounds of normal behavior, etc. But when this one did it last night, for either policies that he had seen enacted into law or programs that the Congress had worked on that he thought were the right things to do, the number of applause moments seemed a little over the top for me. And I haven't seen a number yet. I haven't had time this afternoon to digest all the numbers. But my sense was that last night there were more moments of standing ovation and applause than is typical. And it didn't feel comfortable to me. It felt, you know, we in this country are always very concerned about calling out authoritarian regimes and the sort of in their back pocket Congresses or halls of legislature, whatever they may be called in a particular country. And last night to me resonated a little too much like authoritarianism. It didn't sit well with me. And yet, if you listen to Republicans, they will tell you that last night was the president's opportunity, and he succeeded mightily in affirming what his agenda for the country is and why his agenda for the country is the correct one.
But to be fair, Putin's supporters say the same
thing. The same thing. Exactly.
And I mean, granted, sure, Obama supporters said the same thing, and as did Bush's, but
mm-hmm.
As you said, part of it comes down to the mood of it.
The mood of it, and I think also where the country is. And, you know, we are very aware in this country that, sadly, my opinion, and I think it is sad, though, that over the past 40 years or so, there has been a clear shifting to the left of among the Democrats and the liberals, and a clear shifting to the right of Republicans and conservatives. The problem that I see And again, there are people who will tell you that that is perfectly good thing for the country. The problem that I see with something like that is the opportunity for the middle to come together and say, okay, let's find some common ground upon which we can base some sort of decision making, seems to have been completely eroded. And this notion of bipartisan support, both of your fellow congressman or congresswoman from your particular state or your particular part of the country, where you would just support him or her because, you know what, that's my friend. You know, we may disagree on a lot of political issues, but he or she is my friend. You know, the only time that we saw Congress last night seemed to really rally to itself was when the president noted that Louisiana Representative Steve Scalise had recovered and is almost now fully recovered from what was basically an assassination attempt by a nut job when the House caucus was practicing for the annual softball game that Democrats and Republicans play every year. You know, and you could hear the loud roars of approval, and Steve Scalise stood and he hugged the two gentlemen to either side of him, and I confess that I don't know who they were, both members of Congress, but I don't know, you know, their particular names. You know, and I was struck last night that it shouldn't take a man nearly dying on a softball field practicing for a game for members of Congress to respect each other. And while I was thrilled to see Steve Scalise there, independent of the fact, you know, my politics and his probably don't run in the same circles, our shared humanity as a country is such that, you know, it shouldn't take a man nearly dying for us to recognize him and respect him and like him. You know, and we saw the same thing date back, when Gabby Giffords was shot, I think that was November of 2011, if I remember right. You know, when the Arizona representative was shot, and there was this rallying among members of Congress around her in the same way. You know, this notion that our partisanship ends when one of us is near death. Well, yeah, that's the way it should be. But you know what? There should be a lot of less strenuous levels upon which respect and dignity and common decency come together. We're just not seeing that enough as a country. And unless and until that changes, and there's a reason to change, you know, we're going to continue to see the left go one way and the right go the other. I don't know. It's annoying, and annoying is a bad choice of words for, you know, certainly for me, for a variety of reasons. This is episode 18 of Upon Further Review with the Podcast Profs. I am Anthony Moretti. My normal partner in crime, crime we generally don't do, is not with us this week. Soren Fanning promises to be back next week, but the usual voice of reason has been promoted, so to speak, to co-host.
Yeah, temporary promotion.
Well, but you know what? It's a promotion. You going to update your resume at the end of the day? Co-host of podcast?
No.
Wow. Well, you are an honest figure. Right, this is good.
Well, I mean, I'm already a co-host on my own podcast.
Oh, so you don't need us. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. You're my side job.
Gee, thanks. I so appreciate that.
You're welcome.
No.
It's okay. I worked with you guys first.
That's true. Exactly. And then you found reason and went somewhere else, right? So
basically.
Yeah, that's all right. You know, I think the other thing that jumped out at me last night as I listened or as I watched the State of the Union address was this sense of the subtle but important ability for a president to be a powerful communicator. You know, and I've been old enough, or I am old enough, to remember seven presidents now in terms of how they interacted with the public. And, you know, Jimmy Carter was and still is the sort of quintessential humble next door kind of neighbor. That didn't translate well as president. It just didn't. Set aside his policies. I just think from a communication standpoint, he just did not resonate with the public. Ronald Reagan justified called the great communicator. His ability to make you feel like you were the only person in the room was one of his most important communication skills. And I know it's been talked about a lot and written about a lot, but you know, this week was marked the 32nd anniversary of the Space Shuttle Challenger disaster. And his speech that he gave that afternoon, and I remember watching it live. I was a freshman in college at the time, of all things. Watching that speech and now seeing over time how historically it is mentioned again and again and again as one of the real high marks of how a president communicates with the public really mattered. Anyone who followed Reagan was probably going to struggle. And George Bush, who may be the most decent man of all of these presidents that I'm mentioning, the elder George Bush, he just did not connect with the public well. He was followed by Bill Clinton, who was as folksy as you could imagine. He also made you feel like you were the only person in the room when he spoke. He was followed by the junior George Bush, although they are not technically junior and senior. They're referred to in that way. And Bush seemed to, no matter what he tried to do, get subsumed by 9/11. Everything in his presidency was subsumed by that event and the subsequent war. And I think no matter how well he tried to communicate, it got lost. Then came Barack Obama, who is probably the second best communicator of that group there, or at least maybe tied for first with Reagan.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't watched a ton of Reagan,
mm-hmm.
but watching Obama was always kind of a pleasure, whether or not you agreed with what he said,
mm-hmm.
because he made everything digestible.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, no one's going to understand everything. But he tried to throw in things that either made it relatable or just more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
The things he's most known for still are like his family-oriented things, like the Thanksgiving Day turkey that he saves. Like, people know him because he was considered like the family man president, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it translated really well for him because for a lot of people like me, I'm still not super familiar with everything he did in terms of policy because he started when I was in, middle school probably? Mm-hmm. So a lot of the stuff is admittedly something that just, it was beyond me at the time, and I'm not at the point in life yet where I care enough to go back
and study,
see what's changed and how it's affected things, but I always liked watching him when we were watching him in class just because he's presentable.
Mm-hmm. And I think we, as a society, I think we also remember our presidents when they speak to us in times of just absolute horror. Reagan and the Space Shuttle Challenger. Obama and the too many times he had to speak to us about gun violence. And to me, the moment that will resonate forever for me with Barack Obama's presidency, there are two. One is the night he was elected in November of 2008. And friends of mine and I would always have this sort of debate of, in our lifetimes, would America elect a black man president? Would we elect a woman before a black man? You know, it was sort of these debates that were not necessarily, they're not going to change the world, but you wondered. And, along comes this just remarkable orator, this remarkably intelligent man, this remarkably, as you suggested, family-loving man. Seemingly out of nowhere. Illinois is not nowhere, don't misunderstand me, but I mean, seemingly out of
difference.
Nowhere. Yeah, I mean, Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton was supposed to be president of the United States in 2009. She was supposed to win in 2008 and become president in 2009. And to me, the other moment that sticks with me, beyond that moment where he came out with his family out in Grant Park, and his daughters were so preciously young then, And looking at the number of African-American men and women in the audience whose tears were just uncontrollable, they too never imagined in their lifetime that they'd see a black man elected as president of the United States. And maybe Jesse Jackson's tears were the ones that sort of stood, that stand out in my mind more than any other. But then there was that moment after the Sandy Hook Elementary shooting in 2013, I think.
Yeah, it was like spring of 2013
or something. Okay, in 2013.
I was definitely in junior year of high school because I remember when I heard about it, I was in chemistry. Yeah. So.
And the president delivers this speech, and he's trying on one hand to rally the nation. He's trying to tell us, as horrible as this is, the fabric of American society is not going to tear apart. And he pauses. And he puts his finger up to his eye, and it's clear that he's trying to really fight off a tear. And he's trying to not have his voice crack. And he didn't use these exact words, but you knew exactly what he was saying or what he was thinking. His daughters were darn near that same age in that school, as the kids who were in that school. Granted, the kids who died were first and second graders. But you could see the president thinking, those could have been my kids. And, you know, if we symbolically make the president the father of the country, in some ways those were his kids. And so, you know, we remember moments of presidencies. And, you know, Donald Trump had a chance last night to make a really powerful statement, a moment that we'd remember. And to me, the closest thing he came to, and I think it's going to be a theme of his presidency now moving forward, because I think it's going to resonate well. He used the phrase American hearts, American hands, and American grit. That's a very positive spin on what his presidency is about. An America first mentality. That works if there isn't so much negativity and hostility associated with it. American hearts, American hands, American grit doesn't match up with this idea of we're going to essentially build walls and slam doors. But I think that phrase has a chance to resonate well with the public. And it would not surprise me moving forward if that's something that this president begins to use more often. I think to some extent it has a more positive connotation than does Make America Great Again. And I'll be curious to see how well how well it continues to resonate and how often he uses it, especially with the 2018 midterm election cycle kicking in very quickly. And we're seeing more and more and more politicians announcing that they are stepping aside and opting not to run for re-election on both sides, Republicans and Democrats. So, you know, last night was his chance, his first chance, I think, or maybe his next first chance. Because I don't think there's really been a moment that this president has had a chance to unite the country. Maybe he doesn't want to. I don't know. But I think last night was his next first chance to do it. And he blew it, to be quite honest, because it got so caught up in the partisan divide with Republicans standing as often as they did and Democrats hardly standing at all. I don't know. But saying that, you know, I do know that my Republican friends are jumping up and down with what they heard last night, many of them. And I know that many of my Democrat friends are just shaking their heads, you know, sort of counting the days, hoping this guy doesn't get reelected in November of 2020 or gets impeached before then. I'm less likely to think that impeachment's going to happen, but that's just my opinion, you know, about all of that. What do you think?
I think in his defense, nothing, there hasn't been any real major tragedy since he's been elected. So maybe he hasn't had that growing pain that forces you to sit down and think, is what I'm doing for me in my agenda or the country and its best interest? So I'm going to give him some benefit of the doubt and say maybe he just hasn't had the experience he needs to yet to really buckle down and realize what he's gotten himself into.
He had a chance with what happened in Las Vegas last year. And with 53 people, I think it was, if my memory's being kind to me, who died in that shooting, with another lunatic deciding to take various high-powered weaponry and fire them out of a hotel window to a large crowd that was enjoying a country music concert below him. That could have been his moment. The events of Charlottesville, Virginia could have been his moment. This president at times, maybe it's intentional, maybe it's accidental. He does seem tone deaf in a way to crisis, to responding to crisis, unless he sees the perpetrator as being Hispanic, African-American, Middle Eastern, Muslim in some form. I shouldn't say in some form or Muslim. Those types of perpetrators are going to be quick to be called thugs or terrorists by this man. And if you're going to use that label, then what do you call a guy who shoots up 53 people and injures a couple of hundred in Las Vegas? He has to be a terrorist too, no?
Yeah, I had honestly actually entirely forgot about both of those things. Mm-hmm. So that might also speak volumes to maybe he's never going to have that moment because he's still so caught up in him as opposed to us.
Mm-hmm. Very true. Very true. And what worries me is that, that I'm a big believer in this idea that once a die is cast, you're not going to change it. This man is 71 years old. He has been in a very protective environment professionally and personally for almost all of those years. He has been in a, or has long since used a philosophy that says, I'll write you a check to make you go away and to buy your silence. He can't buy people's silence now as president of the United States. But what he can do is continue to act like he has in the past, except everything now is the most gigantic microphone and the largest stage that you could imagine. And decorum, grace, humility, whichever word is most important, and to some extent those words all mean the same thing, but they don't. Whatever term you believe should define how the president should act, I don't believe this man will. And maybe I'm guilty of putting value judgments in there, and if I am, so be it. But I think we as Americans expect our president to act a certain way, policies aside. This man hasn't, and I don't think this man will. With that, episode 18. It's now legal adult.
I thought you said 17-ish.
18-ish. We'll make it 18.
Who knows?
We'll make it 18. Episode 18 is in the books. It can now vote. The podcast profs, upon further review with the podcast profs, can vote in November.
But it has to sign up.
It has to sign up. That's true. Which it probably won't. Because it's a non-entity, so to speak. But anyhow, all kidding aside, John Roland, thank you for being my partner in podcast crime this week.
Of course, and thank you for letting me be said partner.
Indeed, and to Soren Fanning, who will listen to this once we upload it. Got to get you back here. It's a little bit different looking to my right and seeing an empty chair. Got to get that chair filled
again. Empty chairs at empty tables.
Yeah, we got to get that chair filled again. And more importantly, like I said, I know his much better half has been battling some yucky flu for a couple of weeks. And Susan, we love you. Get yourself healthy and, keep Soren in line because that's more than a full-time job. And I am, not that my Nicole doesn't have the same challenge, of course, and I am Anthony Moretti. All kidding aside, thank you for listening to episode 18 of Upon Further Review with the Podcast Profs, and we will talk to you next week.